The views and opinions expressed during the Drive Time with Dave Glover are those of Dave and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, Dave? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-21. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
Just like the river I've been running ever since. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die. 'Cause I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. Then I go.
And that, of course, is the great Sam Cooke here on Northumberland 89.7. We will play that whole track for you a little later on. Welcome to the show today. Joining me is Rosemary Sadler. Excuse me, Rob Washburn. Rob's here. Hi, Rob. How are you?
Hey, Dave.
Colin Brown is here. He is a local lawyer here in Northumberland County. He's a criminal and child protection law. But on the line, first and foremost, is Rosemary Sadler. Rosemary, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, very glad that you could be here, actually. Now, Rosemary is the president of the Ontario Black History Society. So it is Black History Month. You must be a very busy woman at this time.
That's for sure. I think that, you know, one of the blessings of Black History Month is that it helps to raise awareness. But one of the curses is that for some people, that seems to be the only time they want to focus on it. So we're super busy, yes.
Yeah, no kidding. It's one of those event-oriented things, right? Oh, let's celebrate it while it's happening, and then let's put it on the back burner till next
mm-hmm.
year.
Yes.
Rob, you got a question?
Yeah, I'd really appreciate it if Rosemary would talk just a bit about the history of Black History Month and where how it started, and tell us a bit about it.
Sure. Frankly, it started in the United States. It started with Carter G. Woodson, who was an African-American who could see the value, the need for something to focus on the history of African-Americans. So it started out as Negro History Week in 1826. The celebration grew. And I should say that he's also the founder of the Association for the Study of African-American Life and History, which is essentially what the OBHS, the Ontario Black History Society, is in Canada. They also are dedicated to the study, preservation, and promotion of Black history and heritage. At any rate, the celebration took off. People thought, this is awesome. It does make sense. It became Negro Black History Month. In the meantime, it had crossed over into Canada by way of Black porters who had a lot more mobility and opportunity to witness what was going on in the States. And the very first celebration that was informally held in Canada was held in 1950 at the British Methodist Episcopal Church of Canada on Shaw Street in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And the person who hosted it was actually a former Sleeping Car reporter who went on to become a citizenship court judge named Stanley G. Grizzell.
Wow.
I've got to get this other part out.
Go
here.
Ahead. Sorry.
That was just within the black community. And I think that, you know, for there to be true, broad, diverse education, that program hosted by an organization called the Canadian Negro Women's Association was valuable, but it wasn't having the educational reach that was needed. And when the OBHS finally was formed in 1978, their first order of business was to petition the City of Toronto for a proclamation making February Black History Month. Now, that was 1979. Since I've been with the OBHS, I've been successful at initiating a process with the province, so it's now celebrated in Ontario, with every province in Canada, and ultimately initiating the process with Jean Augustine, who was at the time a member of Parliament.
Mm-hmm.
And it is this year is actually the 20th anniversary of that, the passage of the Black History Month Act of December 1995.
Well, that's incredible, and it's been quite a long road, obviously. And now, one of the things I mentioned at the top of the hour, of course, is that this year, January 21st, is officially Lincoln Alexander Day. It's the first
that's
time
right.
we're celebrating that.
Well, no, not really. Last year, it was celebrated in the province of Ontario. This year, and because the OBHS had a little bit of a hand in that,
mm-hmm.
this year it's now national. And I think that's awesome because he is another first. He was one of the one of many who was part of the Canadian Forces, one of many who went on to become a lawyer. But he's the first black MP,
mm-hmm.
first black lieutenant governor of Ontario, and, you know, first person really to have a day, first person of African origin to have a day named after him across the country. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm. It is absolutely awesome. Now, when we talk about black history, you know, the first thing, and especially as a person who's not of color like myself, the first thing people think about is the racism and all of that, and had to overcome that and all of that went on in Canada. But Canadians, for the most part, have this view of themselves as, you know, oh, Canada's not a racist country. I mean, one of the things you alluded to is the fact that we celebrate this for a month and the rest of the year we put it on the back burner. Could that be part of the reason?
Well, there's so many ways to answer that, but let me start with one way. In Ontario, unfortunately, despite our best efforts and what we certainly think would make a whole lot of sense, is the reality that black history is not a required subject.
Mm-hmm.
So it's possible that nice little wonderful children from whatever background, whatever color, whatever school in Ontario may or may not get much black history education. And so that is part of the value of at least having Black History Month. It might encourage a few people to say, well, gee, let's, you know, bring out the kids' book of Black Canadian history or bring out the film and do something. I think the other side of that is, how are we the same? Are we different than our American counterparts who also continue to celebrate February as Black History Month?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, we have some uniqueness, but I think we have some similarities. And unfortunately, I don't know that I can necessarily support that we don't have racism
mm-hmm.
anymore. I think that we have to give consideration to the reality that where there's limited information, there are greater stereotypes and people act on those. And if you haven't had the opportunity to live with, to be friends with, to work with, to be supervised by or to supervise people who are different than you, it puts you in a position perhaps where you don't have to question or wonder.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up, I was the only black kid in my school. Trust me, you know that there's something interesting about that experience.
Oh, no, absolutely. And I mean, Canada's predominantly a rural country, right? And as you get further and further away from the major urban centers, there are fewer and fewer people who are you know, quote unquote, different from your average, if you will, white person.
Well, I'm not sure about that. I mean, I guess it really depends where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we can get into balance of population and First Nations populations and their treatment and so on. But let me say that Black history isn't something special or, you know, optional. It's a part of Canadian history.
Mm-hmm.
Just like if you're looking at world history, you would be remiss not to include African history. It's a part of it. It's not something that, well, if we get around to it, maybe. It's the whole, that whole ball of wax, all the good bits and the bad bits, that is what our history is. Our history is what has happened yesterday. It's also what happened 500 years ago. And some of it might be a bit messy or nasty. It's still our history.
Oh, no, and that's extremely valid. One quote I heard recently was that at least in the United States, racism's overt. In Canada, it's more insidious. Would you agree with it, with a statement like that?
Well, you know, I was at an event last night where the Law Society put on an event, and I think that we just have a bit of a different expression. I think that Canadians just generally we're a little bit more subdued and not as out there, but that doesn't mean that things don't happen. And I think that, you know, you can be a person can be racist and overt and loud and disgusting, and a person can be racist and be very subtle and smile in your face.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, let's not, it isn't about behavior, it's about perhaps end result, it's about who gets hired, it's about who gets the apartment, it's about who's magically more represented in our criminal justice system. It's about How do you exercise discretion if you have the opportunity to do so? And those are questions that I think we have to wrestle with on a daily basis.
Do you have one last question there, Rob?
No, I really enjoyed listening to Ms. Sadler talk today and explain this. This has been a real insight. Thank you so much for letting us call you today.
Well, I appreciate it so much, and I wish you well, and I'm just so sorry that one of my good friends and former supporters, Larry Hall of Port Hope, who mm-hmm. had lived in Northumberland for a significant period of time, is unable to be with us to be part of this.
Absolutely.
Wonderful, wonderful gentleman, and we all
miss
him.
And we here at the radio station miss him as well. He was actually on our board of directors here at Northumberland.
I didn't know that.
We too miss Larry. Before we go, though, is there one thing that you'd like to say to the listeners out there with regards to Black history, one message?
I think that they should embrace it. I think that if we as a society continue to talk about ourselves and consider ourselves to be nice people, to be accepting of diversity, then I think that, you know, we have to really look at how we can embrace adding to our knowledge. And that, I think, is maybe one way that people can look at what does Black History Month mean and what is Black history and what are the lessons that we can learn about how we have treated people who are like us and who are not.
Well, that's wonderful. Thank you very much. My guest, Rosemary Sadler, she's the president of the Ontario Black History Society. You can follow her on Twitter, by the way, at @OBHistory. Thanks again, Rosemary.
Thank you.
Well, we got another. Actually, you probably heard the beeping in the background there. Kate Kelly's going to be calling in as well. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to pay some bills here, run some ads, and we will be right back. Sounds like we're going to have Kate Kelly ready at that time as well.
Starting your own business is an exciting time in your life, but are you aware of your legal responsibilities as a business owner? Jim McGrath specializes in business law and knows what needs to be done to protect you and your investment. Jim has been a lawyer for over 30 years and understands the law, so you don't have to. As a local resident and an entrepreneur himself, Jim McGrath is a trusted source in our community for business owners just like you. Call 905-373-1999 and let Jim McGrath give you the legal peace of mind you need.
For over 35 years, Northumberland Security Incorporated has been providing everything necessary for physical and electronic security, from locks, alarms, safes, access control to surveillance systems, and handicap door operators. We are virtually a one-stop personal and property security center. operating from Pickering to Peterborough to Picton and everywhere in between. Visit us at 22 King Street West in Coburg, online at northumberlandsecurity.com, or call 905-372-8951, the professional security team.
The three most visited sites on the web are Google, Facebook, and YouTube. For a business to thrive in such times, they have to make use of as many of these channels as possible. Is your business marketing through these platforms? Matthews Media is now offering a selection of social media marketing packages available for any size of business. We set up, customize, and push your content across all relevant online profiles, driving prospective clients toward your business. To find out more about online and social media marketing, visit our website at matthewsmedia.ca or call 905-375-9520.
For over 25 years, Pritchard's Climate Care has been your personal climate expert in the Northumberland area. Pritchard's offers complete heating and air conditioning service and repair for your home or business. We make sure the air you breathe is healthy and comfortable. Pritchard's Climate Care has become one of Southern Ontario's most trusted installers of heating and air conditioning products. Sign up for our We Care maintenance plans and get your furnace service for half off our regular service price. Pritchard's Climate Care, we're not just your climate experts, we're your neighbors. Call us at 905-885-8216 or toll free at 1-877-791-6975.
The story you are about to hear is true.
Ed White fixed my refrigerator.
And?
He did a great job. Now I don't need to buy a new fridge. And if I don't get a new fridge, then I won't need a whole new kitchen to go with it. So my guy is saying Ed White saved him $20,000.
Guys, save 20 grand. Call Ed White Appliance Service in Port Hope at 905-885-7109.
Yes, it is worth fixing.
And welcome back to the show. Joining us on the line is historian Kate Kelly. Kate, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I don't know whether I could be called a historian.
She's a historian, listeners. Well, by the end of this half hour, we'll make her believe it.
Okay. Well, at this age, I am a historian. You are correct.
So we're talking about Black History Month. You know, we've just had Rosemary Sadler on the line. She's the president of the Ontario Black History Society. But you bring a different message here, right?
Well, I think so. I would like to know what Colin and Rosemary were discussing prior to my call-in.
Well, we haven't had Colin on yet. He's actually in the studio. Say hi, Colin.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very good. Nice to finally meet you, Colin.
Cheers.
Well, we've been talking about Black History Month. Why is Black History Month important to Ontarians? And talked about some key figures across the province. And we actually talked about the birth, if you will, of Black History Month or African American Month. I think it actually started off as a day in 1826, and then in 1950 it was sort of brought to Canada. But it's been 20 years since the entire country has celebrated Black History Month, and those are some of the things we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Black History Month for you, what does it mean for you?
Well, I think it means a lot of things. I mean, I think it means the development of an awareness that we have to have as a society, you know, to move forward. And it also brings back a lot of great memories for me, especially when I was working at Pine Ridge High School because I'm an English teacher. And I brought in for Black History Month a lot of initiatives there, along with the principal at the time, Angie Littlefield. She was very, very aware of, you know, the racial conflicts that were going on in the school at that time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so we wanted to bring in some initiatives to really make everybody aware, and not primarily of you know, the history of the Underground Railroad in Canada and that type of thing, the slavery, but more often the contributions of you know, these wonderfully creative and inventive Black people and what they really have done for the world, not just, you know, not just in the past.
Well, and again, there are so many great, I mean, people think about, you know, the great artists, the great musicians, the great athletes, the great actors that came from Canada. Rob, do you have a question?
Yeah, I was going to ask Colin, what does Black History Month mean to him?
Well, I have a different role to play in society than Rosemary does. I'm a defense lawyer, so my angle is traditionally anti-government. So my position is a little different than others. So Black History Month is a time to dialogue at a more enhanced pace on the race relations situation here in Canada and in Ontario, which is dysfunctional when you look in the courts. So keep in mind, I'm also from Nova Scotia. I'm 55 years old, so I wasn't born yesterday. Sure. So when we have a discussion about whether or not Canada is racist, I start laughing.
Mm-hmm.
So my perspective is a little different.
Why do you start laughing?
Well, because it is an idiotic question. Clearly, the country is full of racism. Anybody who would disagree is not being honest with themselves. That's sort of self-evident. So to even ask the question is silly.
Mm-hmm. 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 I agree with him.
Well, and I mean, you talked about how you initiated it in your school because of some of the racism that was going on. How long ago was that?
That would be in the late 90s, mm-hmm. 1990s, and it was the same type of thing. I mean, with the Underground Railroad, it wasn't like this altruistic action, I think, on the part of Canadians. I think Black people came up and struggled with the same type of racism that they were facing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, when I was kind of researching in the past, this thing came up from 1865 or something, where they were selling a woman and her 15-year-old son. It was horrific in New York, you know. So those things are obviously there. And even today, working with the youth in high school, I remember one of the boys saying to me, "Miss Kelly, I'm Black, and when I go into a store, mm-hmm. they're watching me. They're watching me."
Mm-hmm.
And he knows, and he feels it. And that has to affect the psyche, you know, and then it affects us all.
Well, absolutely. You know, I had Echo Namako on here. He's an artist. He's a Lego artist, actually. I used to work with him many years ago. And he talked about that very thing, you know, the idea that just because he's a Black man, he can't go into a store and browse without feeling put upon by security, by management, by somebody watching to make sure he doesn't steal anything. And he says he gets that, even to this day, he gets that wherever he goes.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to believe.
Not really, unfortunately. And I think that's the point that Colin was trying to make. That, and I asked Rosemary earlier whether or not racism in Canada was a little more nefarious, a little more sub-level, a little more beneath the surface than it was. And one of the things that Echo said to me when I interviewed him was that when he was in the United States, he actually appreciated the fact that they were overt with their racism. He said at least you knew where you stood, you know,
mm-hmm.
here in Canada. It's not as easy to tell.
Mm, that's true. Then you have that truth at least you're dealing with, and it's always better to deal with a truth.
Yeah.
Well, it's really interesting. Rosemary made another point about the need for us to understand the history in the context of a larger history. And you know, it's funny. One of the last slaves sold in Canada was actually sold in Haldimand Township, just east of here in Grafton, in 1824. It was a man by the name of Tom, a young man named by the name of Tom. He was 14 years old, and he was bought for $75, and he was owned by Eli Keeler, who was of the Keeler family, who founded Colborne. And he was sold to Elikam Barnum, which again is a very big name down here. Of course, Barnum House Museum, it's that family there. So I mean that was a really important historic moment, and we don't hear too much said about that. The other thing that I found in my research before coming on was that the area from Quinte to Kingston had the largest number of slaves in the 19th century in Upper Canada. So it's mm-hmm. interesting in Eastern Ontario, you know, you'd often think of this being something, you know, in York and Toronto, the larger urban center. And here it was down in this region that was a very large slave population, which I found very, very interesting.
Well, we know from other agrarian economies, like in the southern United States, for instance, that, you know, slaves were purchased primarily to work farms. And so you're not going to see it. There's not a lot of farming going on in major urban centers. And so I mean, I can totally understand why the numbers would have been that high in that region. I mean, we've got tobacco farming, which was huge back then. And, of course, still apples, right? Yeah. I mean, we still see apple pickers coming to this day. Folks, guys who come in here from Jamaica, and I'll be honest with you, I mean, I've spoken to some of those guys. They're not making minimum wage here. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I don't know how they skirt that. But again, so I mean, that in itself is another level, in my opinion, of how racism exists to this day. So, Kate, what has been your experience then? I mean, you talk about being a teacher and how you've had to speak to students. How receptive have students been to the idea of race relations and Black History Month?
Well, I think mostly I really concentrated on bringing things to the students about like not just not just people in the media, but people in the history and how the ancient Egyptians were Black and how the Moors and when I was teaching Shakespeare,
mm-hmm.
Or talk about people like Marianne Shad or Benjamin Banneker, who was, an inventor, who was like phenomenally ingenious, and brought that to the students. And I think I remember there was Eyes on the Prize in the 1980s. I think PBS did that Eyes on the Prize, and I brought that in and started showing that in my classroom.
Mm-hmm.
To open us all up to the understanding of the Black culture in the world. And now I find that in Peterborough we have the New Canadian Center and the Community and Race Relations Committee. They're very, very active. And I'm also on the Poetry Collective. I don't know whether you're familiar with slam poetry.
I am, actually, yes.
Okay, so we have a big active slam team up here, and there's a collective. And we end up doing a lot of things with the centers for race relations, and we see ourselves as, promote diversity in the community, and especially at a post-colonial perspective, and we acknowledge the land before we, before we do the slams, and that type of thing, I think, opens it up. I think Mark Twain had that famous saying about if you wanted to get rid of prejudice, then we should promote tourism, because once you do start getting to know each other on a very human level, then it can change, and change happens, we know, and we can, so we can only do that. And I think that's what we're trying to promote here in Peterborough, as far as the collective goes. I know that.
Colin, you had a comment?
Mm-hmm.
No, I watched you taking notes over there. So,
yeah, as I said earlier, my angle on this is slightly different because of the role that I play. So I'm a lawyer and I do some civil rights stuff and criminal stuff. So step one, we're now bandying about the term racism as if we've a definition for it, which we don't. So that's a problem. So as typical Canadians, we tend to make a lot of noise and nod our heads and have tea and agree when we haven't communicated at all because we haven't defined the terms that we're using. So the question about whether or not Canada is more or less racist than the States cannot be got into effectively if you don't know what racism is supposed to be. So, yes, in the States you're more likely to see somebody in a KKK outfit riding around on a horse with a noose. That's fine. But that doesn't mean that you're less racist as a Canadian if you're a judge and you're throwing the book at a Black guy and not a white guy.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so the bottom line is, it's not as simple as the discussion has lead people to believe so far. It's a pretty complex thing, which I'm sort of pleased we have a little time to get into. And I would just say that what needs to happen is an honest dialogue and not a polite discussion about trying to make everybody happy needs to be had.
Well, I think we should have that conversation. How does one define racism then? How would you define racism?
Well, that you needn't have a sort of universal definition. So we can, for this purposes of this conversation we're having right now, we have to be aware that there's overt racism when you're screaming nigger in somebody's face and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's not allowing your daughter to date somebody who's from another ethnic group. And then there's just simply not paying any attention whatsoever to what's going on at Boots and Hearts, for example, where there was a complaint, or not paying attention to the fact that there's a Black History Month. So maybe we'll just go with standard lawyer analysis, level one, level two, and level three. The level three being, overt KKK-level stupidity, level two being a sort of more polite but behavioral sort of thing, and then number three being even unconscious. There are plenty of people who are racist and genuinely don't know that they are.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'm glad you raised the boots and hearts issue, because that's something that, happened here in Ontario, and it just kind of quickly got mentioned for 2 days. Well, we talked about it, but you and I talked about it, actually, when the event was going on. And that's something that we actually have covered here at the station, because, quite frankly, it's unacceptable. I mean, we're talking about people going to an event to enjoy themselves, and then being put upon by, you know, by ignorance, by bias, by, you know, a lack of caring. And then when you go to the event and say to them, hey, I was treated this way here, what are you guys going to do about it? And they basically said, well, there really isn't anything we can do about it. You know, this was another person at the event. We can't accept responsibility for that. Do you think organizations like Boots and Hearts should be held accountable for these things? And is there a response for them when a situation like that arises? I mean, what should have happened, in my mind, is security should have been brought in. They should have kicked that guy out.
Yeah, I think it's very simple. Yes, in fact, there should be. There very well may be, because I don't think the Human Rights Tribunal complaint is over and done with yet. So it could very well be that that's the kind of thing that happens. And so my answer is, you shouldn't be invited to an entertainment venue and then be harassed mercilessly. Mm-hmm. That doesn't seem to be okay.
Well, it sort of takes away from the word invite.
Yeah.
It really does. I mean, unless you've been invited somewhere to be a target, which nobody wants to be a target, and they weren't specific about that at the event. I mean, had they said on the poster, oh, by the way, this is a predominantly white event, you know, persons of color attend at your own risk.
But I don't think that just, like, yes, taking the one person out who is committing these things, but I think it's a bigger thing. I think it's like, mm-hmm. And being systemic, then we have to discover ways of changing that, you know, so that we don't have these type of incidences. I mean, it sounds like, you know, we're trying to, as a society, evolve to that place where you don't look at somebody's color. You know, it is the character, as Martin Luther said, you know, the color of the character. I don't know, you know, what we do to change mm-hmm. these things. And I would like to hear what the rest of the panel think. Like, what do you see as something that is going to institute changes in opinions and behaviors?
Well, I've dealt with a comment that you just made, and I would suggest that she doesn't understand, and probably I hope will agree with me in a few seconds, that this very idea that one should not see color is insulting and racist in and of itself. I don't want you to not notice that I have dreadlocks, I'm wearing red, green, and gold, and I'm black. That is my identity. So I don't want you to see me as a Hindu or a native or a white guy or some sort of pink blob. That's not what I'm interested in. So it's not a question, in my opinion, that we as Canadians would like to sort of all act as if everybody is the same. Mm-hmm. We're not the same.
Exactly.
The fact of the matter is that I grew up in Nova Scotia. I can break down into tears when I hear the bagpipes, because I grew up with bagpipes around me. I'm part Indian, I'm part German, I'm part English and African. So I grew up eating Indian food and doing African dances. So the fact of the matter is, no, it's not a question of everybody being the same. Scottish, English, Australian, American, and Canadian, all of the differences that make people different should be embraced. That you want to look at the difference in your mm-hmm. skin, and the difference in your hair, and the difference in your teeth and your biology. Study it and be fascinated by it.
Well, that's what makes the country, if we really want to be a truly multicultural society, is recognizing those other cultures, right? It's not just a matter of, oh, well, you know, he may be a person of color, but I don't see that, or, you know, I don't pay attention to that. Because as you say, that is an insult. I mean, we need to be able to embrace the differences among each other, because those are the things that make us better, right? By embracing those differences in other people, by bringing those into yourself, doesn't that make you a better person?
I think we also have to look at the flip side here. Now, if you look at the residential schools mm-hmm. and the attempt for the Europeans to assimilate the Africans or the natives, this assimilation thing mm-hmm. is the, you know, bastard child of this, we're all the same crap, right? So, can I say all that?
You have, so
yeah,
let's
good, okay.
keep going.
Anyway, the point is that we need to accept that a pygmy living in Africa and eating grubs. That's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And Australians may do whatever they do, and English people and whatever. So yeah, we're a very multicultural group here in Canada and the GTA and in the world. And we need to talk honestly. That's what I like about the Americans. They will say, I don't like black people, and then you can discuss it, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what needs to happen. You need to get all this stuff off the table and stop pretending that everything's okay, which it is not.
How do you feel then about things like Black History Month then in that context?
Well, it's excellent because it causes events like this to happen so that the dialogue is had. Now, a lot of times in Black History Month, you'll have people say, oh boy, I never knew that the black people could dance so well or could cook so well or whatever, whatever, whatever. But that's all part of it. It's not all of it. I think that it's a good idea to do all the sort of lighter, more polite stuff where you're not going to have the conflict that I'm talking about. We cannot avoid getting into the United Nations, the International Monetary Fund, the KKK, and the seriously conflictful mm-hmm. reality of racism in Canada and outside of Canada.
Well, even the war on terror. I mean, one of the things you said a moment ago was assimilating our Western European values on persons of color in the First Nations. But isn't that really what the West is trying to do in the Middle East and in the greater area?
Our own government with the... Exactly. You were talking about this earlier this evening about the hijab incident and mm-hmm. our MP down the road. And some of his comments around, you know, people shouldn't be allowed to pledge allegiance to the country.
Wearing a veil.
Wearing yeah. a veil. I mean, you know, that's all part of the discussion that I think that we're having right now.
I agree. However, there are two analyses here. There's one where we all know that really the wealthy and the powerful are doing everything they're doing for money.
That's
so
right.
all of this stuff is not really, they're not really upset because you're black or white or wearing mm-hmm. a hijab or whatever else. So we know that on the final analysis, power and money are what is really going on here. But in terms of us normal individuals living together in a country,
mm-hmm.
In a little small community, we actually have to deal with whether or not they're giving the Tamils a hard time down at the beach. We have to we have to deal with the apple pickers and whether or not they're dating somebody downtown and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
These are the things that we have to talk about. Otherwise, what happens is you don't talk about them and somebody gets their head kicked in, and that's mm-hmm. very Canadian.
No, well, yes, exactly. And I think, and to your point, touche, because that is often what happens, you know? I mean, I remember when I was in grade school in Toronto, you know, we had one black kid in our class, you know, Dennis White, great friend of mine. I mean, he was one of my best friends growing up, but he was, for the longest time, for at least 3 years when I was in public school, him and his brothers were the only black kids in the school.
Could I just speak to that, too? I taught in Gananoque, and I found, and then I went from Gananoque to Scarborough, and there were no black students in Gananoque.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I went to Scarborough, it was the highest visual minority school I was working in. And there was more racism in the school that didn't have any blacks. And there was more understanding and awareness in with many of the students who were in the Scarborough school.
Right.
You know, it's taking in the diversity and understanding it and enjoying other people's differences is part of, you know, what we should be doing as a community. I think Black History Month tries to bring that to the forefront of our awareness, at least for that small amount of time that
mm-hmm.
it does.
Well, and that was a problem Rosemary said she had with Black History Month. I mean, she loved the fact that we promote Black History, but it's one of those things that you do for a month and it goes back
right.
on the shelf.
Right.
So what do we need to do then as a community, locally?
What's the answer? I think you alluded to it. I think having the conversation, I think talking about it, having a frank conversation about how we feel, how race is an issue. And I think that's probably part of the solution. Would you not agree, Carl?
Not to sort of, you know, flatter you guys too much, but the bottom line is that talk radio is one of the more sort of community-based and effective media that I'm aware of, because a lot of the stuff on the internet is so dispersed and so far-reaching
mm-hmm.
that you're not even sure who you're talking to. But when you're talking in a little sort of radio station like this, you can have the dialogue, and then you can meet somebody on the street who actually heard what you were saying that day, and so the dialogue can actually affect the community. So I think having this sort of thing pop up you know, all over North America, the smaller little discussions mm-hmm. are more effective than Rush Limbaugh, for example, babbling on and on and on to everybody and sort of never getting anywhere.
Right. Rob, what about you?
I tend to agree. I think these are things that have to be talked about locally. I think I was disappointed to see that there hasn't been a lot of things being done publicly around Black History Month. I know that there's been some things going on at the schools, and I haven't seen anything yet from the local libraries or mm-hmm. institutions. I know at my college, when we were covering this issue, they didn't have anything organized, and suddenly they're playing 12 Years a Slave on the movie day on Wednesdays, and that was their nod to it. And I think that those things are really important. And it was funny because we had some of the kids call down to Toronto, to some of the colleges in Toronto. And, of course, there's, you know, a vibrant, very active month's worth of activities. And here we were having one activity. But I think that, you know, that was good to that they're at least trying to do something, because I agree with you. I think we have to start these conversations, because you're right. I mean, what went on down at the beach with, you know, all the overt things that were taking place with the parking meters, and then with all the bylaws and the layers upon layers upon layers.
Well, and the letters to the editor referring to people as quote unquote visitors in parentheses, so that, you know, you knew what they were talking about. I mean, this is the subtle racism that I was alluding to and that you were talking about as well. I mean, because the reality is this, you know, somebody said to me, oh, well, they come here and they don't spend any money and they just make a big mess. Okay, well, I ran a business in downtown. I know they spend money in the downtown. I know when people come to this community, they spend money. So the idea that they don't, quite frankly, is a lie. It's not even a myth. It's just a lie. And, you know, to have this sort of pervading the air here, and people talking about it in the coffee shops, and, oh, I can't believe this. And I'm thinking to myself, well, wait a second here. You want to promote tourism. You want to bring people to the community, right? You know, are we like the government of Canada now, where we're basically saying, oh, we're only going to let in the right people, only the right people? I mean, this was the same activity that allowed, you know, I believe it was 15,000 persons of Jewish faith to be murdered on a boat that couldn't land. They ended up having to go right back to Germany, where all of those people were, you know, everyone knows the story of the Voyage of the Damned, right? So, I mean, you're right. We've got to have this conversation. It's got to be frank. It's got to be real. We can't be dancing around the fact that, you know, oh, I feel comfortable saying certain words. I mean, you know what? It's the language that we speak, right? And we need to be able to have those conversations. Would you not agree with that?
Yeah, and I think that it should be highlighted and underlined, because the vast majority of people who don't have words as their tools of the trade, which I do and you do, don't understand how powerful the dialectic is. So right now we've been censored, and we're censoring ourselves, and mm-hmm. we're being very Canadian, and we're being quote-unquote politically correct, which is another term that I won't get into tonight.
Well, we're honoring CRTC regulations. This is what we're doing, actually.
Anyhow, the problem is that we are stifling ourselves, mm-hmm. and I don't think anybody wants to do it. So everybody's unsure, basically, about how to break through this stupidity and actually just say to somebody else, you're an idiot. And here's why. Mm-hmm. And to a certain extent, people don't have a lot of people don't have the proper skills in terms of articulating properly what they want to say. So people need to, a lot of people need to sort of brush up on their articulation skills. But basically, we need to drop the gloves and go at it without mercy on a verbal level.
Exactly.
I'm not advocating physical violence at all. I'm talking verbal.
No, absolutely. Kate, did you have anything else you wanted to add?
Just to that last comment, I just wanted to say that also you want to be able to tell people, like, drop the gloves and tell people, you know, exactly you're being an asshole for whatever reason or whatever. That other person has to be receptive enough to hear you. And so then we have to make safe places where these kind of conversations can go on. And I have to say, like, being part of the Peterborough Poetry Collective, they do formulate a safe, they make a safe place. It's a, you know, it promotes diversity. for all, you know, ethnicities and sexual preferences and everything that you can imagine. So it's very ironic in Peterborough, who has a very small visual minority population, that at any given slam you will see such a diversity of cultures and ages and you know, sexual orientations.
Mm-hmm.
So I think more things like this has to go on in our community and at that level and places where it is safe to drop the gloves and say, this is how I feel about this.
Absolutely. Well, I want to thank you for calling in, Kate. I'm going to have to let you go. Unfortunately, we're going a little over time here. I know the Cedar Rail guys are going to be really annoyed with me, but that's life in the big city. We are going to have this conversation again, though. We're not going to wait for another Black History Month. And I'd like to invite Colin back on the show so we can have a frank and honest discussion about what we're talking about here, because you know what? There's no time like the present.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks. Thanks, Kate.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Always a pleasure. And that's going to take it to the top of the hour, unfortunately, for us here at Consider This Live on Wednesday. I want to thank my guest, as always, Rob Washburn, my co-host. Rob, thanks for being here. Colin Brown, local lawyer, criminal and child protection is his forte for the most part. Very insightful conversation. We may have more to say after we go off air. But here's Sam Cook. Here's a change is going to come. It's something for you to chew on until tomorrow. I'll be back live with your drive time here on Northumberland 89.7. Keep your dial fixed here.
Just like the river I've been running ever since. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die, 'cause I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. Then I go to my brother. I say, brother, help me please. But he winds up knocking me back down on my knees. Oh, there have been times that I thought I couldn't last for long. But I know